Welcome to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Hulings Fund for Visual Artists. The Clark Hulings Fund exists to provide training, introductions, and funding for working artists to turn working artists into thriving artists. Our guest today is Carolyn Edlund. She's Executive Director of the Arts Business Institute, a nonprofit that offers creative business solutions to artists and craftspeople. She's also the founder of Artsy Shark, a forum that targets artists as small business owners with marketing and sales tips. So, Carolyn, can you take a moment and just tell us a little bit about your background and what you do?
Sure, Daniel, and thanks for having me today. Actually, my background includes being a working artist. I had my own production studio starting in about 1980. I ran a ceramic jewelry studio for 20 years, and during that time, I sold my work extensively retail and also into the wholesale marketplace. And in 2001, I closed my business, had a few back and neck problems from studio work and repetitive motion and so forth. And at that time, I had been self-employed for 20 years, and I thought, who's going to hire me? But almost immediately, I got a job with Portal Publications, which was the largest art publisher in the world for the mass market channel. And as a representative for them, I called on all types of retailers with art and gift lines and card lines. And what I learned was a lot of different strategies that large manufacturers use when marketing and selling their work into all types of stores. So eventually, in 2009, when I started the Artsy Shark blog, I did so with the thought that I was going to share not only what I'd learned from being an artist for all of those years, but also some really smart strategies I'd learned that big business can use that can also be effectively instituted into a small business model. And it's been a great ride since 2009. I've been writing business articles for artists. In 2011, I was invited to become the director of the Arts Business Institute, where we travel around the country, putting on live workshops for artists, dealing with the business of art, creating a line, pricing effectively, marketing and selling your work, and basically launching and growing a small business. So that's what I'm doing today.
Now, Artsy Shark and also the Arts Business Institute are focused not just on sort of arts crafts, but also fine art. Do you find that there is are there any challenges in crossing over that barrier? Is there a real barrier there? And also, are the principles different for running a business around one versus the other?
That's a great question, actually. And I think that there are similarities, but there are some distinct differences. First of all, in the craft mediums, the medium itself doesn't matter so much. It's more or less the form in which you structure your business. I had a production studio, so we were in the wholesale marketplace, and we were making the same things over and over to sell. If I were a fine artist, I might be making only originals. And so you have a different way to sell. If you are selling in the wholesale marketplace, you'll be dealing with outright sales to repeat retail customers. If you are a fine artist, you're most likely going to be dealing with a gallery. That's a consignment model. And there would be a different approach to dealing with those gallery owners. But I would say, Daniel, that overall, what we speak about is creating a vision for your business, setting goals and ways to put them in place, learning how to speak about your work and how to promote and market. And those strategies would be suitable for anyone in any medium, and whether they're working on one-of-a-kind work or whether they're in production or selling reproductions or whatever. So there is quite a crossover.
Well, you talk about having a vision for your business, and you mentioned that, you know, the real point is having goals, business goals. Why do you believe it's important for artists to manage their art
as a business or even begin to think of their art in that context? Do you find some resistance there?
Well, I find actually that artists of all types have a great desire to sell their work. And it's totally understandable. I think for various reasons, it certainly is, validates them as an artist. They feel that other people want their work. They may be looking for some income. And there's actually many reasons why people want to do it. The reason I ask people about the vision that they have is that I want to know how they see themselves if they're doing what they want to be doing with their artwork. For instance, if they want to be a full-time artist, how would that look? What would they be doing every day? When I work with artists on developing strategies for their business, it's really important that they're doing what they love and that they'll be living the lifestyle that they want to live. The last thing I'd want is for an artist to be stuck doing something that they end up hating because they feel they need to do it in order to sell. And of course, you wouldn't continue doing that, and that would end up in your business closing. So yeah, that's the reason for the vision is, what do I really want? It may turn out for certain artists that they don't really want to work all the time, creating work for sale, and that might take the joy out of it for them. And if that is the case, it's important for them to know that before they spend a lot of time and effort in creating a business that they end up not being happy with.
Well, I think that you've nailed really the crux of the issue, right? I mean, I think to channel sort of the inner consciousness of a lot of artists, how does an artist build their business without sacrificing their craft? Do you run up against this question a lot?
I do. In a little bit of a different question, they'll say to me, should I be creating work for what the customer wants to buy, or shouldn't I be making what inspires me and what I love? And the answer to that is, if what you love to make also appeals to customers, then you're in a real sweet spot and you'll be able to sell what you make. But if your inspiration drives you to make something that isn't really commercially viable, you know, then they may not have success in sales. So I think the question really is, you know, where is it right for that particular artist? There are some people who will say, I absolutely want to design for my customer. I want to enter a niche. I'm going to do this. And if my customers want me to make custom work or do commissions for them, I'm happy to do that. And in my opinion, that is perfectly fine. There are other artists who say, you know, I think I wouldn't be true to myself unless I made what really inspires me, and that's really the purity of being an artist. And that's also perfectly fine. I don't mind how people want to approach it, but they just need to get clear. If they're in doing a body of work that doesn't have a lot of appeal to customers and they find a difficult time locating a market for that type of art, then that's going to be a struggle for them. So sometimes it is a compromise, and I think it depends on what people are willing to do in their business. What if you have skills as an artist, that's great, but being a business person involves a total different set of skills. And it may be that for some artists, exhibiting their work, perhaps with a goal of being in a museum or something like that, might be better suited for them than saying, I want to sell. Because if you want to sell, then you are in sales. And that's just a fact. And that is very difficult for some people to deal with.
Well, I think the answer can also be and both, you know, so that would be right, the ideal world where we find the ability to not sacrifice our craft to service the inner muse, but at the same time, reach an audience. There's some validation of every inner muse by having other people sort of sign on for, yeah, I feel the resonance of that work. I wonder, is it important for artists to have repeat customers? Because it seems like some of this discussion would be driven by the notion not just of do you want customers, but do you want customers that come back again?
Absolutely. In fact, one of the most important messages in my sales strategy talk that I give during our workshops is that repeat business is what builds business. And that's true in almost any business that you're in. And it's five times easier to sell something to someone who already owns a piece of your work. Can you imagine if you only had new customers? It would almost be like cold calling all the time. So whether you are dealing in a situation such as a wholesale relationship where your work is being ordered on a regular basis by a retail buyer, or whether you have a gallery that is carrying your work in an ongoing relationship and you're continuing to ship work to them and to sell work through them, or whether you're cultivating collectors for your work, and then you're following up and staying in touch with those collectors with your new work and sharing with them and driving repeat business through that method. You know, any of those work, but I think it's very important to understand that you do need that repeat business to actually grow a thriving business.
Do you find that what you do transitions from, say, business education, if you will, to almost life coaching? I mean, I'm thinking about that artists don't just have an intellectual barrier to sometimes to growing their business. Not artists uniquely. We all have, we're all often too close to what we do to figure out how to grow it effectively, which is why we reach out for help, ideally. But maybe not all the barrier is intellectual or a thought process, but some of the barrier may be emotional. It may be the way we feel about what we do. Is that a challenge for you? Do you find that you have to delve into that as well as sort of basic business education?
Yeah, absolutely. I think for a couple of reasons, as you mentioned, art is very personal to artists and it's an extension of their life. In fact, I think many artists feel that they're compelled to create. So they don't have a line between, you know, I'm at the office, I'm at home. They also need to take the other obligations in their lives into consideration. Are they caring for children? Do they have a job already? Are they taking care of parents? How many hours do you as an artist have to pursue your business? And another emotional barrier, I think I spoke with an artist actually yesterday about her work. And her biggest challenge, believe it or not, Daniel, was a lack of confidence. Her work was excellent, but she didn't realize it. And she'd also been to an art salon or some type of a group meeting where other artists who were in different mediums were actually giving her negative feedback. And, you know, when you hear negative feedback, you hear one negative comment, and it takes 10 positive comments to kind of overcome that and cancel it out. So what she was really suffering from was a lack of confidence, because she didn't know if she was good. She didn't know if she should take herself seriously. And it's impossible, of course, to look at yourself objectively. So she really needed that feedback from me that, yes, in fact, your work is really good. It is saleable. And in the meantime, of course, she's selling her work. So she needed to get over that hurdle herself.
There's almost a mythical line between artists who engage in business and those of us who are just in business. One of the costs that it probably has is it costs artists a sense of community with other people that are in similar endeavors, but maybe are not fine artists, at least. I wonder what you think of the starving artist stereotype. You know, that's really taken hold in our culture, and it almost to the point that there's an excuse because, you know, we can say, well, I don't make any money, but I'm an artist, and it becomes noble to be a starving artist. But I always look at starvation as not noble. I would rather see an artist thrive and go, how noble is that? That's awesome. So I wonder, do you find that this meme of the starving artist is still popular? And if so, how do you deal with it or counteract it in the course of what you do?
Yeah, I think it's a dilemma for many people. And it's interesting that you use the term starving artist. I remember years ago, I was actually in a class about investing. And everyone in the class kind of introduced themselves and stated what they did. And when it was my turn, you know, I introduced myself. My name is Carolyn Edlund, and I'm an artist. And the instructor laughed and said, "Huh, so are you a starving artist?" And I said, "Well, no, I'm not. That's why I'm in a class about investing my money." So you see, it's the popular culture that artists should be starving. And I think it's a myth that some artists believe. And as you suggested, I think it could be an excuse. But, you know, I don't look at artists that way myself. And maybe it's just because of what I do. Because it doesn't bother me at all if an artist says to me, "I want to create work, I want to do what I love, and this thrills me." Even if they decide not to sell their work at all, their art is completely valid. And if that's what they want to do, is to create work, whether they want to keep it, whether they want to share it with their family, whether they want to enter it into exhibitions, it's totally fine. I don't look at them as less than at all. But I think that some artists will look at very successful people who are selling quite a bit, and they might feel less than, because they're putting the onus on themselves that unless I sell my work, it's not good enough, or I'm a failure. That simply isn't true. But it's, again, you get back to the emotional battle and the dilemma. How successful is success? How much do you need to sell to be successful? Where's the limit? It's open to interpretation. So I think it can become a real snarl for a lot of people who don't even know how to quantify that.
What you're describing, it's almost an insidious cultural force. There's a catch-22. We put artists in a box that, so I either sell out by making money, or I'm not good enough because I'm not making enough money. There's not really a safe place to be who you are, and no wonder some artists will turn their nose up at that and say, "I'm not going to play the game at all." And we do the same thing with ministers, politicians, heads of charities and nonprofits. It's almost like, well, you should give your work away. You should be starving. We almost want to keep them in a special place. And yet the truth is artists are people, and to have them as part of our community and to really have art be among us and not some kind of sequestered output of an unpaid priesthood, we have to really treat, I think I'm preaching a little bit, but we have to really treat artists as full partners in our economy. And I'm really glad that you're sort of drawing out these issues.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I think that there is a perception that, well, artists are starving or tortured or whatever. And on the other hand, artists can be highly successful. But, you know, I'm going to flip this, and I'm going to say that the other perception of artists that I think quite a bit of the public has is they're quite envious of the artist's lifestyle, their creativity. You know, a lot of people who purchase art and who collect art are actually very creative people themselves. I sometimes will go into a workshop and I'll say, "How many people here own or collect art?" And almost everyone will raise their hand. And I certainly own a ton of art myself because I love it. Now, many of the people who might be your collectors have a job they hate. You know, they're wearing high heels, or they're commuting on the beltway or in the subway, and they're working in a cubicle. And what they really desire is, you know, to live the way that they perceive artists live. And so, you know, there's also that image of the artist who's free to create and has this wonderful lifestyle. So it's really a twofold. And, you know, I jokingly encourage artists to feed that dream. And I'll tell them, you know, don't promote the fact that your car is 10 years old or that you got rained out at the last show. You know, feed that dream and tell them, "I love what I do. I love my work. I love creating it. I love sharing it with you." and that artists share their story and their inspiration with their collectors. And what the collector is buying when they make that acquisition is actually a little piece of the artist's creative spirit. They're capturing it for themselves. They own it. They display it. It feeds their self-image. And they'll tell your story when they show your art to other people. So one of the things that I will encourage artists to do is to refer to your customers as collectors and kind of elevate them to, you know, something that they thought they might never be. And so I think that in that way, those people do have a great respect for the artist, and that might be where you find your customer base, is the people who love what you do. You need to find who they are, locate your target customer, and then reach out to them on that emotional basis and tell them, you know, why you do what you do, why you love, you know, art, and sharing it with them, and how you'd like to make it part of their lives as well.
I really think there's a lot of value in what you're saying. I love that artists can refer to any of their customers as collectors. For one thing, of course, that helps with that repeat clientele concept that we talked about.
Yes.
But another thing is also means that we're all of us are, to the degree we buy any art, we're all intrinsically related in a community with the artists themselves. And I think that's really key. You know, you're talking about the glamour and freedom that artists have that often creates kind of a public envy of the artist's lifestyle. But, you know, I think artists have had a tremendous cultural influence of late as well. I see entrepreneurs who are interested in widgets and startups whose examples include not necessarily the Rockefellers and the Carnegies of the world, but also include a bevy of artists who have defined for themselves a certain freedom and lifestyle that we want in any area of business. So in that sense, artists have achieved a kind of iconic status in certain business circles. And there are books about this now. I just love that. So tell me, why, given all of this that we've talked about, what was in your mind? Why did you start Artsy Shark?
Well, you know, Daniel, one of the original ideas I had when I got started, and I'll admit that I just started without having a completely formed plan. And, you know, I sometimes recommend that other people do that too, just start. But my original thought was that I had learned a lot through making about every mistake in the book, because I never received any business training when I was an art major. And I had learned through mistakes, and I had learned through mentors. And I wanted to share that with other people so that they could benefit from what I'd learned and maybe use some of those strategies to, you know, kind of move their own businesses forward. And what I then found, and interestingly enough, was that, yes, artists want to learn how to market and sell their work. They do. But what do they really, really want? They really want someone else to do that for them. And I think the fact that I started featuring artists on Artsy Shark and promoting them is what has led to the success that I've had with it. Currently, I get about 50,000 hits a month on my site. And apparently, you know, it's just through persistence and through, I guess, kind of rising in visibility. Artsy Shark's been named one of the top 10 business blogs for artists, one of the top 10 art sites. And so I get a lot of interest in artists who want to be promoted there, as well as learning how to promote themselves. And fortunately, through the networking that I've done and through the subscribers that I have, they get a lot of response, so that they're getting sales and galleries and art licensing contracts and so forth from those features. So that's worked out really well for me, and it kind of evolved as time went on.
Let me ask you about certain specific areas of business as it applies to art. So tackling branding. How can artists create a brand around what they do?
Well, I think there's some standard branding that you're going to want to do, which would be the look. So say, of your marketing materials, the logos, the colors that you use, the fonts, and the voice that you speak in. So that, for instance, if you're reaching out to your collectors or potential collectors, let's say in an email campaign, that as you send out your monthly campaign, they're going to see that logo, they're going to see that branding, and they're going to say, oh, I know who that artist is. And so they're seeing you over and over again, and it takes numerous times to be recognized. So you want to be doing those things. You also, I think, artists need to introduce themselves. I think that you will need to include your photo as an artist, because people buy art from people, and they want to know, who is this artist? If they see your photo, then they're going to feel that they know you. And if they see your photo over and over, and you see that consistent type of presentation, as well as seeing perhaps some key pieces of art that you use frequently to share your content, they're going to start with the recognizing your work and then finding out more about you and getting to know, what are you about? What is the concept behind your work? How do you work? And, you know, why they should care about what you do.
That's really valuable. I want to focus then a little bit on the marketing side. So how has marketing changed over the years, if it has changed? You know, maybe from the time that you got in this business or were running your studio, and how can artists keep up with that now?
Well, I think marketing is certainly now global with the internet. It's changed everything. I remember about 4 or 5 years ago, I was a guest at an artist salon, and I was a speaker there, and I met a gallery owner. And she said, I've closed my brick and mortar, and all of my sales are now have gone online. So that was kind of the first that I had heard where a gallery had literally just changed into a virtual gallery. And I think that artists could take the lead there, because even though I believe artists have certainly suffered with the recession and, you know, with the problems that people have financially, they've also gained a huge market opportunity because their work can be seen 24/7 on their website, and it can be sold all over the world, not only through their website, but there are hundreds and hundreds of platforms to sell your work online. And in fact, one of the projects that I undertook was to put together a directory of those places. And I have that right on my site at Artsy Shark. It currently has over 300 places where artists can sell online. So although that's just a general directory, and there are many ways to sell and not all of them suit all artists, I think it makes sense for anyone who wants to sell to look at what their options are and to see if those opportunities to sell might be suitable for them.
How do you describe the skill set that artists need to market or sell their art effectively? And I realize that sales and marketing are different things, but do they need to focus on having a cohesive collection, on knowing their audience? Do they need to focus on some kind of production qualities that ensure their art is ready for publication? Or are there other skill sets that they really need to develop with marketing in mind?
Well, I will always tell artists that before they start marketing their work, first of all, they need that cohesive collection that you just spoke about. Their work should be in a signature style, which is recognizable as their own. And once they have that collection, they need outstanding photographs of their work, because quite frequently, the people who will be looking at your work won't be seeing it in person. They'll be seeing images of it. And I'm a real stickler for this, because if you don't have really, really good professional quality images, you are losing, you know, such an opportunity. Your competition out there who has those outstanding images are the ones who are getting juried in. They're the ones who are getting into publications and so forth, because that image quality is so high. Then before you can start marketing. You need to understand who your market is. Most people don't buy original art or craft. Most people might go and look for wall decor at Target. And, you know, that's perfectly fine if they do that. They're just not your customer. So you need to get a very clear idea of who it is that you're speaking to. Who is your ideal customer and why? Who are you selling to and why do you connect with them? Are you in a niche market where you have a customer who's really interested in the theme or subject matter that you're making, of the work you're making? And then you also need to know, why should these people buy from me? And to create a message that really emotionally resonates with that customer. And once you've put those things into place, you're in a position to move forward in a very strategic way and a very focused way, and you're not spinning your wheels or trying to appeal to everyone and ending up attracting no one.
So the importance of audience analysis, the importance of understanding not just who your audience is not, but it's not the people that buy their art at IKEA, but who the audience is, and really what motivates them to buy, and the importance of just of production values, you know, the image quality. So I'll insert a little plug here. This is something that we care a lot about at the Clark Healings Fund. And so we provide, as most people who are listening to the show know, artists with funding, introductions, networking, PR exposure, and tools. And part of the tool set that we offer is something called Artwork Archive. There's plenty of information about that on the website, clarkhealingsfund.org. But essentially, it's a tool that allows you to upload your high-quality photos of your art or high-quality images of your art and present them in a satisfying way to galleries, museums, potential collectors, people that are going to host art shows, and even more importantly, to sort of track the business side of it. You know, where is your art sitting right now? Where are the gallery receipts? All of that kind of business management stuff. So for those that are interested in that tool, we'll give you 20% off just by going to the clarkhealingsfund.org. And moving on, I want to ask you one last question about business. So we've talked about marketing. We've talked about branding. Let me ask you about scalability. So how should artists manage their audience growth? Is there a fear among artists of getting too big too fast? Are there the traditional issues that small businesses have with scalability where you cannot keep up with demand, or your production values have to change, or your methodology has to change in a way that could disrupt not only the focus of the artist, but the pace at which the work is made? Or is scalability not as much of an issue among artists as it is other entrepreneurs?
Well, you know, I think that's a terrific question, and I might have a little bit different take on it. I would say that if an artist is keeping up with demand, they probably need to raise their prices as part of the equation. And they may want to scale by using different methods. Now, if you are an artist who only creates originals and you're dealing with galleries that do not want you to make reproductions, honor your contract, certainly. But, you know, fine artists who make reproductions are able to leverage each one of their images and scale their business by selling those images over and over again. If you're working with a print-on-demand site, for instance, a lot of them will put your images on pillows or phone cases or any number of other products, and you could create an income stream there. I talked to a lot of artists about creating in production. That's certainly my background, and I've got a great interest in tools that allow artists to scale. One of them would be a 3D printer. I just spoke with an artist the other day who has just bought a sublimation printer. I talked to another artist who just purchased a large printer to create prints and giclées. They want to use these high-tech tools to scale their businesses while controlling that right in their studio environment. And as far as scalability, for instance, the artist who's got the sublimation printer, and I don't know whether you're familiar with this technology or not, but it allows really outstanding quality images to go on any number of surfaces. So she is a painter, and her work is suitable for going on any number of products. So she might want to put them on ceramic mugs. She might want to put them on fabric, tote bags, clothing, or anything else. And cost-wise, even though her initial buy-in with equipment was expensive, she is positioning herself to be able to sell her work at wholesale. So she's now entering an entirely new marketplace where she can, you know, scale her business, go full-time, and get her images out there on products of all types into the marketplace. Now, that's definitely not for everyone. But if there are ways to make your work easier, whether you need a laser cutter or whether you need, you know, any type of software or technology that's going to make you more profitable in your pricing formula, I think that that's a big plus. There are some people who only want to do it the old-fashioned way. You know, they want the sandpaper and they want, you know, to only use certain tools, and that's perfectly fine. But I think that for artists who do want to scale their businesses, there are more opportunities than ever, and it's a very, very exciting field.
I know about 3D printing. I never really thought about the implications of it for fine artists. And certainly, you know, that is the Batman's tool belt, the way in which we amplify the force or create a force multiplier of our own intrinsic creativity as we reach for a tool, you know, because we can't reach for magic or superpowers. We reach for something technological to do that. So I think that's a brilliant insight. I almost want to do a whole show about different technologies to help with the scalability of the arts. Let me ask you a fun question, and we'll wind down with this. There are no wrong answers to this question. So if you could do one thing differently from when you first started down this path with what you do, if you could go back, what would that thing be?
No, Daniel, I would say that if I were starting out as an artist and doing the same business that I did, which was ceramic jewelry in production, if I knew then what I know now, I would have invested so much more time and effort into marketing, because I was watching my pennies and foolishly at times didn't take advantage of places to advertise, of opportunities to reach out to potential buyers. And I think that I actually could have grown my business even larger than I did. Now, I had 3 or 4 studio assistants at any time, but I think it could have gotten much bigger, much faster if I was willing to put the investment into marketing. And today I realize it is so important if you're an artist and if you want to sell your work and you're dead serious about doing that. Many artists find that 50% of their time is involved in marketing. So I probably would have taken my own advice at that point, my younger self, and I would have done that at that time.
I'm going to cheat and ask one last question. Again, another fun question, because you've been such a fun guest. And we were also talking about technology and superpowers, so I think this will be right up your alley. So if you, in the present now, you talked about going back when you first started, but in the present, if you could have one technology or superpower to do something that you're currently not able to do with your career and your business, what would that be?
Oh, wow. A superpower. Well, you know, I think that certainly with what I do, which is content creation and sharing information, and, you know, today's economy and today's learning, it's all about information. Everyone is always searching for things online and wanting to get information that will help them. And that's certainly, you know, that's what we do in both our sites. If I had one superpower, it would be to get into everyone's inbox and to be able to reach as many artists as wanted to gain information. We have a ton of free information. It's just there for the reading. You know, read it, share it, download it. We have so much information for artists that is completely helpful. in their businesses, that I just wish that there was some way that you know, we could just explode our reach and approach and serve any artist out there who wants to learn.
Great answer. You've been listening to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Hulings Fund for Visual Artists. For more information on the Arts Business Institute, visit artsbusinessinstitute.org. For more information on Artsy Shark, visit artsyshark.com. And for more information on the fund, visit clarkhulingsfund.org. And be sure and follow our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Carolyn. It's been really great having you.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.